Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Part-time Pomp is about to introduce Mike Tomlin. As Tomlin once said a long time ago before they played the Ravens in the AFC title game, he said it's Steelers-Ravens. It would be big if it was in a parking lot. It just happens to be the AFC title game. This week, the Steelers can clinch the division if they win. But even if they lose, there's still a clear path to the division by winning their final two games. There's injury intrigue. What happened at the end of the half? Here we go.
Good afternoon. Quick turnaround on a six-day cycle this week, but I'll give you a quick assessment of our last performance. Like I mentioned last night post-game, it just wasn't a good game for us. It wasn't a good game for us. From a coaching perspective, from a strategy perspective, it wasn't a good game for us in terms of playing and executing. We owned that. You know, it manifests itself in a lot of ways, and oftentimes, even though it was a poor performance by us, a game can be summed up in a limited number of plays. That's just how close it is in our game at this level. The difference between squashing grapes and drinking wine is that tight. And as poorly as we executed both playing and coaching, I thought the game could be summarized into a couple of red zone possessions that we didn't maximize. We had the ball in their territory when we had the fumble recovery on our punt team, and we settled for a field goal. And then in the second half, we were driving into the red zone after a big play on a flea flicker, and we fumbled the ball. And, you know, when you're playing good people, as the road gets narrow, you got to maximize those red zone possessions, and I thought those points were significant. On the defensive side of the ball, there were three specifically that I'm thinking of, possession downs, where we had a ball carrier netted short of the line of the game, and he made us miss and move the chains. Not only do you lose that down, and that's why we call them weighty downs, but those were drive-producing type plays and time of possession type plays. You make those plays so you don't have to make plays that follow. And we didn't. We didn't tackle well enough specifically in those instances. And that's why time of possession was the way it was. That's how they were able to possess the ball and thus produce points. And so for me, you got to play well. You got to strategize well. If you don't, you position yourself to not be fortunate. And that could describe some of the things that transpired in that game. I know a lot's been said about, you know, some controversial officiating calls in the game. But I just believe when you play well, those things get minimized. And when you play poorly, those things get highlighted. We're not going to hide behind those things or seek comfort relative to those things. Things like that happen week in and week out. But when you're playing well, it doesn't become a talking point or specifically it becomes less significant in our eyes in terms of how the game unfolds. And so from my perspective, I think a big component of us turning the page this week is getting focused on the things that we own in that performance and making necessary corrections, while at the same time understanding the awesome opportunity and preparing for the awesome opportunity that we have this week. From a health perspective, we had some guys carrying some injury going into last week. I don't have a lot of new information on those guys. Just in general, we'll formulate a plan for having increased participation from those guys over the course of the week, and we'll let the amount of that participation and the quality of that participation be our guide in terms of potentially including them. Those people are George Pickens with his hamstring, Deshaun Elliott with his hamstring, Larry Ogunjobi with his groin. There were some guys that went down in game that are going to be evaluated, and the door is ajar for those guys. TJ Watt, I just saw him walking around rather comfortably, but again, he's questionable with his ankle. We'll see where the roads lead us. Dante Jackson with his back, and Justin Fields with the abdominal injury that he sustained in play. But as I mentioned, none of these six guys could be characterized as out as I sit here today. We'll probably start with partial participation with them tomorrow and increase that and make decisions as the week goes on. Now, in reference to Baltimore, really excited about this opportunity. For obvious reasons, it's a divisional game. It's a road divisional game. It's Baltimore. And I understand the nature of this rivalry and the amount of attention that it brings, and it's exciting and humbling to be a part of it. While at the same time, we got an opportunity to pursue a division championship this week. And so, man, we're excited. We respect this process of preparation. We're going to display our excitement by getting singularly focused on what it is that we need to do to prepare. That's what the staff's been doing really since the plane touchdown last night. And I'll outline these guys a little bit briefly. I think the most significant thing about them is the transformation that they're undergoing defensively. The last time we played these guys, they brought on Dean Pease as a senior advisor, if you will, a few weeks prior to our game, and I was wondering what that impact might mean, to be quite honest with you, the first game. Looking at the tape since the last time we played them, I see exactly what it means. Dean is a quality veteran defensive coach. We've competed against him a lot over the years. We're highly familiar with his schematics. And to be quite honest with you, man, a lot of what they're doing more recently, specifically since our game, looks a lot like D&P's football. They keep a lid on things. They mix up a variety of two high safeties and so forth. They don't give up big plays. They were 32nd in the league going in the passing game going into our last game. And since our last game, they've given up two passes of 20 yards or more. And that was just the other day versus the Giants. And so that speaks to a sea change. They're doing some things schematically different to minimize big plays. And I think Coach Pease is a significant component of it. But they also have shuffled some personnel, particularly on the back end. Last time we were getting ready to play those guys, they had Williams and Eddie Jackson at safety. They don't now. Washington has emerged as a safety. We saw big time position flexibility between 14 and 44 the last time we played them. 14 was playing nickel and safety. 44 was playing outside corner and nickel. All of that settled down. 14 is playing safety. 44 is almost playing exclusively nickel. They've acquired White, and he played against us the last time, and his role continues to expand. I see a lot of settling of the divisional labor, a solidifying of roles, and some altering of schematics that has done an awesome job of minimizing some of the explosion plays that kind of characterized them coming into this last game. And so that really has our attention. There's still the rough and tumble run defense group that they've been. They minimize explosion plays in that area of the game as well. They shed blocks, they come off blocks, they make tackles. They've got Mike Pierce back, who is a formidable run stopper, who is capable of being an additional hand in terms of minimizing the run. And so they've really settled some things down on defense, and they're making themselves a more difficult group to move the ball with, to score on. The tape tells me that. The statistics tell me that as well. And so, man, we're working with an edge, man. They're about as different as you can get defensively over the course of a month. And so we got some work ahead of us in that area. On the offensive side of the ball, man, it's more the same. You better deal with Mr. Jackson. If yesterday is any indication of where he is, he was 21 of 25, I think, with 5 touchdown passes. I think he had 60-plus yards rushing. He's distributing the ball around to a lot of people. Last time we played him, I think Mark Andrews was just getting his footing after having returned. Man, you see the relationship there, the depths of those waters and that relationship, particularly in the red area and waiting moments. But he's doing a good job of spreading the ball around to a lot of people, man. Zay Flowers, Bateman. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Justice Hill out of the backfield, who is an awesome complimentary back to the big runner. He's good on the perimeter. He's good in the passing game. Man, we got our hands full in preparation for this one. But again, as I mentioned, we're highly familiar with these guys. But the same thing could be said, I'm sure, for them. They're highly familiar with us. I think that's what makes these games so exciting. The strategy so exciting, the process of preparing so exciting, and ultimately exciting for the fans. And so with that, I'll pause and open it up for questions.
Mike, did you read the pool report or read it about the end zone incident, and did you talk to the league for any reason about
it? I didn't read the pool report because I saw it as it happened, and I hadn't had a chance to talk to New York because I've been so focused on what's going on with Baltimore in the present day.
Mike, just looking back, the decision to punt on fourth down, your defense has been on the field a lot already in the second half. What went into that decision to put them back out on the field?
You know, it was the distance. You know, had it been inside of maybe fourth and five, I probably would have definitively gone for it. We were outside of 5, it was 7. And obviously from an analytical perspective, the further you get away from the line of gain, the less probable you are of success. Fourth and 7 probably would require max protection, as in terms of fourth and 5 or less, generally does not. And again, so we had 3 timeouts. It was about midway of the fourth. I took a chance and thought that we could maybe stop them and get the ball back and play the field position game based on the distance was a little bit too uncomfortable for me at that juncture. But make no mistake, there are 2 sides to that coin in terms of decision making, but I'm comfortable with the process that we went through at the time in terms of how we played that situation.
Mike, when you guys, they physically had the upper hand, you got a short week, another physical game coming up. How do you address that physicality in practice, especially when you have limited pad time this time of year?
You don't. That is money already in the bank. That's why we approach team development the way that we do. That's why we tackle in Latrobe every day that we have pads on. That's why we do not run away from, you know, building skill in that area and a mindset in that area at the early stages of team development, because we realize you don't get an opportunity to recoup that, particularly with how practices are scheduled today in today's NFL. You get a limited number of padded practices, as you mentioned, at the early portions of the season. You get less at the end. And so that's why I'm so committed to hardening our group in the team development process, because as you mentioned, you know, these physical games come down and you better be ready for them. And I'm comfortable with our level of readiness, although we didn't perform to our liking yesterday.
Mike, what's made it tougher for you guys to run the ball recently? What is it? Execution? What reasons would you give?
You know, it's probably a little bit of all of the above. You got to compliment those that we compete against and their schematics and their players, environment, but also we absorb a lot of the responsibility or the quality of our play or the lack thereof. When you're not getting possession downs, particularly early in the game, that has a component of it too as well. There have been several games in the last several weeks of that time frame that you mentioned that we've been 3 and out and to start games, and you never get an opportunity to gain run game traction or accumulate the total number of snaps to play that component of the game when you're 3 and out and you're slow to winning possession downs, and that's been a component of the issue as well.
Mike, you talked about the phrase of warming up for the competition. Would you say that was part of the problem that you guys went through yesterday? And how do you counter that when you've seen it happen a few times this year?
I just use it as a catchphrase to describe not winning possession downs early in the game, and so I just use it in that way. But it's about execution. There's nothing mystical about it. It's about preparing and positioning guys to win in those weighty moments and executing, and we haven't done it consistently enough at the early stages of football games.
Like, what was the explanation when Connor, I think, got head slapped on the punt? It was deemed post-play rather than during the play. Were you satisfied with that?
I was not.
Now, respecting what you said last week when you were asked about kind of looking at these games as a three-game chunk, you mentioned being on a seven-day cycle. You mentioned being on a six-day cycle this week. From an evaluation of injury standpoint, now that you're at least in the playoffs, do you look at the injuries from just a six-day cycle, or do you have to look at these two games more closely together because of the calendar crunch?
I think specifically regarding injury, it has nothing to do with the six- or seven-day cycle. It's probably just a general mindset that you have regarding injury at the early portions of the season relative to now. At the early portions of the season, you always have a big picture mentality where small problems don't want to become a big problem because of the totality of the games that lie ahead. When you get to this portion of the season, when the sand's running through the hourglass, that's not a component of decision making generally regarding people. If they're healthy and available, they go. And that's generally the mindset that we're in. This is a big game. We have an opportunity to solidify the division this week. And so rest assured, the healthy people are going to play in this game. Those that are capable of playing are going to play in this game. And we're not going to look ahead to, you know, potentially what happens on the other side of it. We got definitive, tangible things to pursue this week, divisional championship. And I think that merits all hands on deck.
Mike, with your familiarity with the rules on the committee and everything, why is that penalty not considered? It happens during the play. Why is it considered post-play?
Again, you know, I don't want to get into specifics of what was said to me in-game or how that was administered. There's some controversy around it. I acknowledge that. But I just tend to focus my energies on the things that we can control in those environments. I know that when we play better, these discussions are less significant. And so I just want to play better, coach better.
Mike, it's rare that you guys allow two wide receivers to get over 100 yards in the same game. What did you guys have to do better? Was it more about matchups and needing to win specific spots, or were there certain alignments they caught you guys?
You know, I think it was a couple things. I thought, you know, obviously we had a schematic commitment to minimizing Saquon being the leading rusher in the league and how he had controlled so much it went on for that unit. But also, as I mentioned, we lost some critical third downs that were very winnable, and they produced subsequent downs. Those subsequent downs produced yards and potentially points. And we did not win in possession downs. They were, what, 10 of 17? We've been much lower than that over the course of the season, and particularly in recent weeks. And when you win those downs, you're off the field. And so, you know, I think a large component of the yards that you mentioned can be summarized into the lack of possession down execution, which produced more plays.
Mike, how do you balance the decision to play players or not play players when it comes to injuries at this time of the year, where maybe earlier in the season you might not want a small problem turn into a big problem, but you also have a division championship on the line this week?
As I mentioned, you know, we're playing for a division title this week. Those that are healthy will play.
Mike, you've already had some shuffling of.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
You've already had some shuffling with your secondary, with Dante Jackson's status a little bit up in the air this week. How do you kind of look to fill his production? Does a guy like Corey Trice, who hasn't really gotten a hat lately, get an extended look this week? Or
we got a lot of capable players in that space. We've been really comfortable with it. We've been blessed with some depth there, and so if people are unavailable, I am completely comfortable with those that get an opportunity to play, whether it's James Pierre, whether it's Corey Trice. You know, when called upon, both guys have delivered and delivered to a satisfactory level. And I'm confident in terms of how they practice and approach their business. And so I don't know that that's a big issue for us.
Mike, when you're in a game like yesterday in the second half and you know your possessions are limited and you're probably counting possessions, short of hoping you get off the field, does it change or what you do or how you coach or anything like that?
You know, I don't know that I'm willing to acknowledge that at times, you know. I believe that our defense is capable of getting off the field, and that probably was a component of the decision-making to punt on 4th and 7. I understand how the game was going, but I've been working with these guys day in and day out for a long time, and particularly in the weighty moments, I just got confidence in them. And that confidence is unwavering, even in face of what transpired yesterday.
Mike,
Mike, you guys have won a lot of games this year, adjusting in-game to what opponents are doing and countering what they're doing. How do you apply that to the front part of the game and making that happen more so in the front of the end of the game, making the other team have to make those adjustments?
That's what you're talking about as it pertains to this week or looking back at what's transpired?
Like last week, you talked about losing those certain possession downs and then having to be the team that makes those adjustments in the game.
Yeah, there's a cat and mouse strategic component to it. We make adjustments and alter our plans. Our opponent does the same. It's just a component of ball this time of year. We all got a lot of tape out there in terms of describing what we are from a personality perspective, and it's just a strategic component of it.
Mike, the weight was going late. TJ's injury came with, 4 minutes-ish to go. You're down a couple touchdowns. They have the ball on your side of territory. The chance to win looks like it's, fading. Is there any discussion at the coaching staff to maybe take out some guys that you might need down the road?
No.
Why not?
Because we play and play to win.
Anyone else?
You didn't have Alex in the last game against Baltimore. Preston was fairly new to you. How do you think he and Herbig handled things when they played? And how important, just in general, is the outside linebacker position when you face Lamar?
Not only the outside linebackers, but all the rushmen are a significant component when you face quarterback mobility, and particularly Lamar Jackson. The addition of Preston has been significant for us. He's a veteran. He knows what to do. He's highly skilled. He's done a nice job of fitting in. We've gotten quality production from our edge people, regardless of who's in the game, and I expect that to continue. But I'm also optimistic about the availability of TJ based on what I've seen today.
Mike, I know you talk about nothing being mystical. You guys have been pretty successful against the Ravens of late. Can that provide any sort of mental advantage to your group?
That's probably a better question for them to answer. I know that we respect the work that's ahead of us this week. We know that this performance stands alone. We're excited about the opportunity to pursue a division championship this week. But I think the totality of recent games and things of that nature from a mental perspective is probably better directed at those guys.
Anyone else? All right.
Thanks.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and rewatch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, it's Mark Schler with the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. The NFL season is in full swing, and I'll be here to break down all the action like no one else can. Follow and listen to the Stinkin' Truth Podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Very interesting. One thing comes to mind. Najee got benched in the game, or am I losing my mind?
No, I think he did as well.
So Tomlin didn't get asked about that after the game or today. I think that's sort of significant, like, are there any other ramifications there? Is he still benched? Is he that mad at him? I mean, listen, if I were a fan, I would have been ticked off at that fumble too and probably said, get him out of there. But part of me also says he's been around for a while now. If you truly believe he's your guy and you believe in him and you think he's a great player and all that, do you bench a guy for one mistake? Do you bench your quarterback for an interception?
Well, I think the...
A bad interception?
I think the tough part about it was they only had one possession after that, and it was Cordarrelle Patterson. Why Patterson over Warren? I don't know that question either. That's getting ridiculous. But, I mean, Philadelphia holding the ball for the final 10 minutes of the game probably kept us away from knowing the real outcome of that. Like, if was Najee actually bent? If he didn't play the next series, then yeah, definitely.
All good questions. The Mike Tomlin presser reaction brought to you by your local Parmore stores. Remember, if there's not a Parmore store near you now, there will be soon. The big story here, top of the show and now, is injuries. And, man, it sounds like Mike Tomlin does not want to err on the side of caution here. It sounds like he's, you know what's to the wall. I can say it. Balls to the wall here for Baltimore.
He's in my boat. Win this game, win the division. Figure out the rest later.
Figure out if your guy, if putting a guy on a field wasn't a good idea,
well,
and then he's injured later.
If it's like a big-time injury, like T.J. Watt expected to miss 3 weeks,
playoffs. He wants it to be if they're healthy and ready, we'll put him on the field. I get that. There's a lot of nuance there.
T.J. Watt walking around comfortably around the facility and Tomlin saying that indicates to me that T.J. Watt will play this week.
Really?
I'm very confident in that.
Okay. Yeah. Certainly there's a big difference between being capable and healthy for an October game and a playoff game. In other words, being medically cleared doesn't tell you the whole story. I mean, come on, we've seen it a million times in the NFL. A guy will gut it out for a must-win game when he wouldn't have for a normal game. That's obvious. So obviously he was cleared to play for that playoff game. Jerome Bettis, when he got shot up before the game, was it the Patriots or the Ravens? I can't remember, a long time ago. He ain't playing in November, even against the Ravens with that injury. He went out and played because it was a playoff game. Do you treat this with a playoff mentality? If T.J. Watt's at 75% and cleared, he's cleared to play, he's at 75% with a risk of further injury, I think you're crazy to play him. Tomlin's talking about, we wouldn't even think about the future. Early in the season we would, because we're thinking about those games later in the season. Okay, so now you're late in the season, why aren't you thinking about the playoff? How can you not think about the playoffs right now? How can that not be at the forefront of your mind, especially if you're Mike Tomlin? And you've had years ruined by injury. Whether it was T.J. Watt or Ryan Shazier or Le'Veon twice or Le'Veon and A.B. in Denver or Marquise Pouncey in the Super Bowl, whatever it was. So maybe it all is very clean and it'll be obvious that TJ and George can go out there with no risk of injuring, though, of re-injuring themselves on those specific injuries. And you go in with a clean conscience, everything's fine. They'd be playing if this was October against the Jets, and they're playing now. But man, there's a lot of layers to it. It's just not that simple. Hey, if they're cleared, they play. We got to win a division. There's a big, big difference between a guy getting cleared to play and knowing you could risk further injury to, hey, it's must win. We got to get him out there for a playoff game. There's a big difference between 75% with a risk of injury and this guy's ready to go. And even if we were playing anybody else at any time in the year, he'd be ready to go. I'm erring on the side of caution. I'm not treating this like a playoff game because I know even if I lose, I can come back and beat the Chiefs. The Chiefs feels like a bigger game to me. If you beat the Chiefs and the Bengals, you win the division. And I understand the mentality of going all in for this one, but I said it before this three-game gauntlet, and I'll say it now. The main priority coming out of it is healthy for the playoffs. That is still my main goal. At this point, you're probably only going to get one playoff game at home anyway. That's the way I'm treating it, and none of us will ever know, you know, how it's evaluated behind closed doors with the doctors, with the coaches, with Omar and Art, with TJ Watt and Pickens and Elliott. You want to throw him in there, but Watt and Pickens, two just indispensable players. Are you treating it like this is just like a playoff game? We're going to play these guys even knowing there's a further risk of injury? Wouldn't even think about playing them if it was the Raiders in November, but we're playing them here because the division's on the line. I think that's mistaken thinking. If they're cleared to play and the doctors are telling you, you know what, man, TJ would be good to go in any other week too. I'd play him. Then beautiful. Throw him out there against the Ravens. If it's a situation where, Mike, this is touchy this week, you know, if it were a playoff game, I'd put him in there. Because it's a playoff game, you know, it's do or die, it's must win. But we are taking a little bit of a risk here with TJ's foot, with George's hamstring. I don't know if they'd be playing in many other games, but, you know, I could clear them this week to play and they want to play. In that situation, I'm not. I still think the top priority here is the health of these players. And I could even make an argument that the Chiefs game is bigger than the Ravens game. And that you might have a better chance to win the Chiefs game if Mahomes is out. And it looks like he's going to be out against Houston. It sure looks that way. They're going to bring him back 4 days later, is it? For a Christmas Day game against the Steelers? I don't know. And them without Mahomes is a win, I think. Of course, unless you go in there without TJ and Pickens, then it might be a battle. But bottom line is, let's hear what Tom, do you have that yet? What Tomlin said about those injuries? It sounds like he is not going to err on the side of caution. It sounds like he said, listen, injuries early in the season, we do err on the side of caution because we want these guys down the stretch. But down the stretch, we don't use that same philosophy looking ahead to the playoffs. Now it's just go. It's go time. And I would say, aren't the playoffs the primary goal here? You're in. You need to be healthy. Let's hear what he had to say, how he explained it.
Respecting what you said last week when you were asked about kind of looking at these games as a three-game chunk, you mentioned being on a seven-day cycle. You mentioned being on a six-day cycle this week. From an evaluation of injury standpoint, now that you're at least in the playoffs, do you look at the injuries from just a six-day cycle, or do you have to look at these two games more closely together because of the calendar crunch?
I think specifically regarding injury, it has nothing to do with the 6 or 7 day cycle. It's probably just a general mindset that you have regarding injury at the early portions of the season relative to now. At the early portions of the season, you always have a big picture mentality where small problems don't want to become a big problem because of the totality of the games that lie ahead. When you get to this portion of the season, when the sand's running
Okay, let's stop right there. What about small problems becoming big problems in playoff games? Like, if you're going to look at the beginning of the season, we don't want this problem reoccurring later on. How are you not looking at that the same way right now? That's sort of the logical part that I don't get. Maybe you disagree. I know Limits disagrees with me. A lot of people do. And I'm not sitting here saying I'm not playing TJ Watt in this game. No way. Or Pickens. I'm simply saying that the only way I do play them is if they would play in any other game. I'm not treating this like a must-win playoff situation. That's all I'm saying here. And logically, it doesn't make sense to me what he's saying there. Maybe it does to you. Because the same rationale that he's talking about for early in the regular season, that I don't want a small problem to become a bigger one later, is the same rationale I would use right now. I don't want TJ Watt and George Pickens injury issues right now to rear their ugly head in the playoffs. I'd rather go into the playoffs as healthy as can be. I'm definitely choosing health over home game for sure. Who wouldn't? And I know there's a lot of gray area here. These are huge decisions, and it's going to be fascinating to see what Tomlin and the Steelers do and how Andy Reid treats the Mahomes situation. But I'm using the same rationale that he is for early in the regular season for right now. Save, in other words, it's saving guys for the biggest games later. 412-928-9370, 928-9370. Not putting somebody at risk, not maybe risking a small problem becoming a bigger one. That makes sense, what he said for early in the season using that rationale. It makes even more sense now, especially if I'm Mike Tomlin and I've had seasons blow up because I'm not healthy for the playoffs. Health over home game. And if TJ's fine, of course he plays, obviously. I'm not saying you go to the extreme of just, you know, saying you're not going to play because we fear you might get injured. If he's cleared and he's feeling great and he looks great and yes, of course, play him. But a lot of times it's not that easy. And he sounds like he's just, we got to win this game, and anybody who's available is playing, no matter what. Doesn't sound like he's erring on the side of caution. So he was just talking about that rationale. Let him finish there.
To become a big problem because of the totality of the games that lie ahead. When you get to this portion of the season, when the sand's running through the hourglass, that's not a component of decision making generally regarding people. If they're healthy and available, they go. And that's generally the mindset that we're in. This is a big game. We have an opportunity to solidify the division this week. And so rest assured, the healthy people are going to play in this game. Those that are capable of playing are going to play in this game, and we're not going to look ahead to, you know, potentially what happens on the other side of it. We got definitive, tangible things to pursue this week, divisional championship, and I think that merits all hands on deck.
I hear that, but the sands aren't running through the hourglass right now. They're not. They're not. The biggest games, no matter what, lay ahead after the Ravens game. Notably the playoffs. That's when they're in. The Steelers are in. The sand, the hourglass, Limits, is the hourglass the little thing you turn around in a game of Scrabble? Is that an hourglass?
In a game of Scrabble?
Or in a game of, I don't know, a game with an hourglass in it?
Yes, the sand through the hourglass.
Yahtzee. Don't you have to make a decision in Yahtzee by the time that thing turns?
I don't think I use an hourglass in Yahtzee.
No, then give me a game you use an hourglass in.
I know Dan Zangrilli used one to give the score time and period when it rolls out.
There's a lot of board games where you turn around the hourglass. Like sands through the hourglass. These are the days of Moses' lives. The sands aren't running through the hourglass right now. They simply aren't.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the Ayuks of our lives.
Nobody's touching the hourglass until the wild card weekend. That's when you turn that thing over. That's when you're on the clock. That's when you play no matter what. That's when you play on one leg. That's when you play knowing you could risk further injury to your ankle, groin, anything else. Not this week. There's no sands running through hourglasses this week. They can lose to the Ravens and win the division by beating the Chiefs and Bengals. At home, I might add. Maybe without Mahomes in one, and maybe with the Bengals having nothing to play for in the other.